Chapter 28. Pitt immediately alerted Admiral Sandecker, who dispatched a Numa jet to pick him up at the Jean Taylor airfield. Kelly drove even faster on the return trip down the river, arriving only minutes before the jet landed. She insisted that she could be useful, and no argument from Pitt held enough water to keep her from boarding the plane and accompanying him to Washington. Giordino and Rudy Gunn were waiting on the tarmac when the plane taxied to a stop at Langley Field. They'd no sooner boarded the plane than it was airborne again, flying south to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and the corporate headquarters of the Blue Seas Cruise Line. Gunn had arranged for a Lincoln Town Car as transportation, and within minutes of the jet landing, they were heading toward the harbor with Giordino at the wheel. The Blue Seas building towered 900 feet above the waterfront on an island where the Blue Seas cruise ships docked. The exterior design was shaped like a gargantuan sailboat. The outside elevators were housed in one huge shaft that rose into the sky like a mast. The rest of the mostly glass-enclosed building was arched like a giant sail. The glass walls were blue, with a center wall of stretched white fabric that could withstand winds up to 150 miles an hour. The lower 40 floors of the building housed the offices of the cruise line, while the upper 50 floors housed a hotel for the passengers to stay in before boarding the fleet of cruise ships. Giordino turned into an underground tunnel that ran under the water to the island holding the huge building. A valet took the car, and they entered one of the outer elevators and rode three levels up to the main lobby, which was situated under an atrium that rose 700 feet in the middle of the office and hotel floors. The secretary to the CEO of the Blue Seas Cruise Lines was waiting for them and escorted them up a private executive elevator to the head office on the 40th floor. Warren Lash, the president of the cruise line, came from behind his desk to greet them. Rudy Gunn made the introductions, and everyone took a chair. "Now then," Lash, a tall man with graying hair and slightly on the heavy side, looked as if he might have played football in college. He peered through dark, coffee-brown eyes that moved from Pitt to Kelly to Giordino to Gunn, like a panoramic camera recording a scenic vista and then back again. "What is this all about?" Admiral Sandecker seemed quite adamant over the phone that we postpone the sailing of the Golden Marlin. "There is fear the ship may suffer the same fate as the Emerald Dolphin," Gunn replied. "I have yet to see a report that says it was anything but an accident," Lash said, his face expressing doubt. "I find it impossible that another disaster could happen." Pitt leaned forward slightly in his chair. "I can assure you, sir, that Numa has found irrefutable proof that the fire was intentionally ignited, and evidence that clearly shows explosives were used to sink the ship while she was under tow. This is the first I've heard about it." The sudden anger in Lash's voice was distinct. "The insurance companies that covered the ship have not reported to me or my corporate directors that the fire was deliberately set. All we've been told is that the fire emergency systems, for whatever reason, failed to operate properly. Blue Seas will, of course, file lawsuits against the companies who manufactured the systems. That may present a problem if it is proven conclusively that the fire systems were purposefully disabled. You'll never sell me on that fairy tale." "Believe me," said Pitt, "it is no fairy tale." "What possible motive could anyone have for destroying the Emerald Dolphin and murdering thousands of passengers?" "We believe the motive was the destruction of Dr. Elmore Egan's new magnetohydrodynamic engines," explained Giordino. "Why would anyone want to destroy the greatest propulsion technology of the new century?" asked Lash, seemingly baffled. "To eliminate competition." "Frankly, gentlemen," he nodded at Kelly and smiled, "and, ladies, I cannot help but find your story anything but pure fabrication." "I wish we could explain in more elaborate detail," said Gunn, "but at the moment our hands are tied until the FBI and CIA make their conclusions public." Lash was no fool. then this is not an official NUMA inquiry, nor is it authorized. In all honesty, Gunn answered, no. I hope you're not going public with such outlandish speculation. Admiral Sandecker agreed that any official report should not be released until the investigation is concluded by all the agencies involved, said Pitt. I might also add that he believed that it would harm the cruise ship industry if the news media began sensationalizing the incident with stories of terrorists destroying ships and killing passengers. I couldn't agree more heartily on that point, Lash conceded. But why prevent the Golden Marlin from sailing? Why not 100 other cruise ships? If the sinking of the Emerald Dolphin was a terrorist act, why not alert other cruise lines around the world? Lash threw up his hands. You cannot convince me to delay the sailing of the Golden Marlin on her maiden voyage. As the first underwater cruise ship, she will usher in a new age of luxury sailing. People made their reservations as long as 2 years ago. In good conscience, I cannot disappoint the 400 passengers who have booked passage. Many have already arrived and are staying in the hotel. I'm sorry. The Golden Marlin will sail tomorrow as scheduled. Since we cannot persuade you otherwise, said Pitt, can we make a case for increased security and a crew of marine inspectors to maintain a constant check of all equipment and systems on board the ship during the voyage? Boat, Lash interrupted, grinning. Submarines are called boats. Isn't it a luxury liner? Asked Kelly. When sailing on the surface, but this vessel is built to cruise underwater. Will you agree to extra security and an inspection team? Persisted Gunn. Yes, most certainly, Lash said affably. Pitt was not finished with his requests. I would also like to have a dive team inspect the hull below the waterline. Lash nodded curtly. I can arrange for divers. We have them on staff for underwater repair and maintenance to both ships and building. Thank you for your cooperation, said Gunn. Though I believe the precautions are unnecessary, I don't want a repeat of the Emerald Dolphin tragedy. If not for Lloyd's of London, Blue Seas would have surely filed for bankruptcy. Giordino and I would like to go along, if you have no objection, said Pitt. Include me, Kelly insisted. I have a vested interest in my father's work. Lash rose from his chair. I see no problem. Despite our differences of opinion, I'll be happy to arrange for staterooms. All the passenger accommodations are booked, but there may be a few no-shows. If not, I'm sure we can arrange something in the crew's quarters. The boat will arrive at the dock front of the hotel tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. You may board then. Gunn shook Lash's hand. Thank you, Mr. Lash. I hope we haven't unduly alarmed you, but Admiral Sandecker felt you should be aware of any potential danger. I quite agree. Please tell the Admiral I'm grateful for his concern, but I foresee no serious problems. The Golden Marlin has undergone extensive sea trials, and Dr. Egan's engines and all the boat's emergency systems performed beautifully. Thank you, Mr. Lash, said Pitt. We'll keep you informed of any new developments. As they left Lash's office and were riding down in the elevator, Giordino sighed. Well, we tried. I'm not surprised, said Gunn. The Emerald Dolphin disaster has left the company hanging on the ropes. Postponing the sailing of the Golden Marlin would have closed the cruise line for certain. Lash and his directors have no choice but to send the ship on her maiden voyage and hope for an uneventful cruise. After Gunn returned to the airport for the flight back to Washington, Pitt, Giordino, and Kelly arranged through Warren Lash's private secretary to book rooms at the hotel for the night. As soon as he was settled in, Pitt called Sandecker. We failed to talk Lash into postponing the sailing, Pitt explained. I thought you would, Sandecker sighed. Al and I, along with Kelly, are sailing on the boat. You cleared this with Lash? He agreed without argument. Pitt could hear the Admiral shuffling papers on his desk over the phone. Then Sandecker said, "I have a bit of news for you. The FBI think they have identified the man behind the fire on the Emerald Dolphin from descriptions given by the surviving passengers." "Who is he?" "A real sour apple, this one. His real name is Omo Kanai, born in Los Angeles. He built a 5-page rap sheet by the time he was 18 and enlisted in the Army to escape an assault charge. Worked himself up through the ranks before becoming an officer and transferring into a highly secret military organization called CEASE. Never heard of it." "Considering their function, very few in government have," said Sandecker. "CEASE stands for Covert Elite Action for Select Elimination." "I've still never heard of it," said Pitt. "It was originally formed to combat terrorism by assassinating terrorist leaders before their actions could threaten American citizens. But a decade ago, the president curtailed their projects and ordered them disbanded, which was not a good idea, as it turns out. Highly trained in political and covert murder, Omo Kanai, now a captain, resigned along with 12 of his men and formed a commercial assassination company."
"A murder incorporated?"
"Along the same lines. They hire out for killings. There is a whole list of unsolved deaths over the past 2 years, from politicians to corporate directors to certain celebrities. They've even hit mafia leaders."
"Aren't they under investigation?" asked Pitt.
"The FBI has files, but these guys are good. They leave behind no evidence of their involvement. Investigative agents are frustrated because they have yet to lay a finger on Kanai and his murdering gang. There is growing fear that future economic wars will lead to death squads."
"Murder and mayhem are hardly what economic forecasters have in mind."
"Repulsive as it may sound," Sandecker said conversationally, "there are a few corporate CEOs here and there who will stop at nothing to achieve power and monopoly."
"Which brings us to Cerberus."
"Correct," Sandecker answered succinctly. "And it's becoming more evident that not only was Kanai behind the fire on board the Emerald Dolphin and the explosions that blew out the hull of the liner while under tow, but it was he impersonating a ship's officer who sabotaged the fire control systems."
"One man could not have done all that alone," Pitt said dubiously.
"Kanai doesn't always work alone. That's why I'm warning you and Al to be alert every second you're on the Golden Marlin.
We'll keep a sharp eye out for any suspicious behavior by the crew. Better you keep an eye out for Omo Kanai."
"You lost me," Pitt said, puzzled. "His ego is too great. He won't leave a job like this to his subordinates. You can bet he'll run the show himself."
"Any idea what he looks like?"
"You should know. You met him."
"I met him?
Where?" "I've just received word from New York police investigators. Omo Kanai was the pilot of the old plane that tried to shoot you down."